This is Corolla Digital.
Hey, everybody, it's the Dr. Drew Podcast, very special Dr. Drew Podcast. What I'm going to present to you today is something I recorded about a year ago. It was a podcast called All About Women, and for some reason, people didn't find it. And I thought some of these interviews were quite good. So I wanted to take this opportunity to present them to you. I think you will like them. They're interesting. These are extremely successful, interesting, young women, and about the sort of common struggles that women are presented with today. And today, my guest is Anahita Sadagetfar. She is an attorney and a frequent contributor on my HLN program.
This is All About Women with Dr. Drew, a podcast designed to focus on women and the reality and complexities of living as a woman today.
If you haven't got the guts to do this, then step aside.
Now, here's your host, Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Indeed, this is All About Women, and my guest today is Anahita Sadagetfar. I say that right, huh?
You said it perfectly.
Took guys at practice. She's been a regular on my HLN program. Anahita is an attorney. She's a defense attorney. She is a great talent, been very helpful to us. And I thought it'd be interesting to bring her in here and talk to you all about a couple issues. She's an expert in sexism and sexual harassment, and we'll get to that in a second. But in the course of sort of preparing to sit down here and have a conversation, we realized there's something else that Anahita's dealing with that I think personally you're dealing with that I think would be very meaningful to a lot of women. It's also very sort of pertinent to young women now. And this is a common thing.
Yeah.
What am I talking
Definitely.
About?
Definitely. I think what we're talking about, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here on your first show. But what we were talking about is the dilemma that I think a lot of professional women face, and that is career versus family, and how very difficult it is as a woman to achieve that balance in life. And that is a struggle that I am facing currently.
And you actually were saying you feel resentful to women who have children or are stuck at home who are jealous of you. In what sense?
Yeah, because I think it goes, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. So sometimes when I am complaining, I'm not one to complain, but sometimes when I do, you know, I talk about the fact that, you know, I have all these great things going on in my career, and I'm, you know, running a great law practice, and I'm doing television and all these wonderful things going on professionally for me. But yet I go home at the end of the day and I'm alone. I don't have anyone special to share that with. And then I have my friends that are, you know, mothers or women that say to me like, oh my gosh, I would love to have your life. You have such a dynamic life, and you get to go, you're on TV, and you get to go to court, and you're litigating, and you're doing all these fascinating things, and I'm at home scrubbing the floor and taking care of three kids. And so they actually resent me. They want my life. And again, I don't know. I think that there has to be a balance, and it's been very difficult to achieve that.
Is there a balance, or is there a timing issue? Does everything have to be done sort of in a sequence?
Well, yeah, I think unfortunately, and you know this better than I do, biologically, unfortunately, we are up against the clock as women. So, you know, what do we do? I wish there, you know, could be a situation where we could be in our 40s, and many women do, and I'm, you know, with all the medical technology and everything else, I'm sure it's possible. It is possible.
To get pregnant.
But
it's riskier
children.
After 35. And after 40, it starts to drop off rather precipitously.
Don't tell me that. Okay, you already told me this.
I'm just saying. It's a reality that you have to confront. It's not necessarily going to be difficult for you, but statistically, yeah, it becomes more difficult.
I get it. I just don't like hearing it, but it's very true. And I think so. You do have to worry about that. I think that you have to kind of, again, like I said, I felt that in my life, in order for me to get to where I am, I did have to sacrifice a lot on the personal end. And now, you know, I'm like opening my eyes, and all my friends are starting to get married. They're having their first kid, even second kid. And I'm here all alone. And I, again, like I have all these, you know, thank God I'm not complaining. I hate to be, oh, I'm a damsel in distress. My life is great. Thank God. But it's missing that one piece. And it's
I want to do a thought experiment. And I'm not in any way suggesting this is going to happen to you, but I want to understand the meaning of it so we can all kind of be honest about that. Let's say it doesn't happen for you and we're 20 years down the line. What does that mean to you?
Wow. 20 years down the line, I guess I'll just be alone forever.
Well, let's say you're not even alone, but you didn't have kids. Because
it'll be difficult.
The probability of you being alone is unlikely.
It's happening now, Dr.
It's unlikely. But the kid issue is the one that the clock is really ticking on.
Yeah.
And so what would that mean to you 20 years down the road? You've sacrificed and it didn't work out. What would that mean?
It would really hurt me, and I'll tell you why. Not because I feel that you have to have children in order to be happy or whole, but I come from a kind of traditional background. So, and I have a big family. I have tons of cousins. My dad is one of six kids. So, you know, I'm Persian, and unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, the emphasis really is on family. And so I feel in a way I would kind of be letting them down. So it would be painful for me because I want children. Obviously, I want to be a mother. I think
Why?
I'm ready to be. I feel like I have so much to share. I have this love inside of me. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm seeing little kids at the mall and I'm going like, oh, how cute. Whereas before I was like, I don't want kids.
You didn't want kids for a long time.
Yeah. This is kind of like an epiphany. I think for so long, like I said, career was so important to me that I viewed men and even family as distractions. So I would just kind of brush them aside. You know, great guys that now I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? I would just like, you know, diss them, push them to the side. And I think, you know, like I said, now that I look back, I'm like, wow, you know, I think I just have so much to offer. I think I would be a great mother and even a great wife.
And so if you were talking to your 25-year-old self now, what would you tell her?
Balance. Don't be so scared. I think for so long I felt, because my mom was such a traditional mom. She was, you know, 18 when she got married.
So you didn't want to do that.
I didn't want to be her.
Yeah.
I felt like her whole life was like, you know, she lives for us.
Too much.
And so I think I went sort of the opposite extreme. Like, I'll never be dependent on a man. You know, my dad was sort of like the man who wore the house in the household. And I always would like tell my mom, like, you know, stand up to him. Why does he make all the decisions? And I think in a way I saw that growing up, and I wanted to just, it bothered me. So I said, I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to get an education. I'm going to be independent. I'm going to be successful. And I think I took it to an extreme.
But we would agree. I think everyone listening would agree you've done a good thing.
Thank you.
No, but I don't mean that in a sort of simplistic way. I mean that you, women value this, men value this. It's a good thing to be, have a career and be independent and be autonomous. No one would
disagree. Guys say that, Dr. Drew. They say that, and in fact, a lot of the guys I meet approach me because of that. They're so impressed, and oh my gosh, you're an attorney, you're doing this, you're a hard worker. But at the end of the day, I find from my experience that men, even successful men, are intimidated or they don't like it because they don't understand. Like, I was just talking about this earlier that, you know, I was dating a guy and he just didn't understand why I couldn't miss work for a week and go to Cabo with him. Like, why not?
How can he do that?
Yeah, I'm like, you know, exactly. So it would like bother him. Like, I just don't understand. Like, just who cares? Just, you know, close your office. And it's not that easy. So I think while that's something that attracts a lot of guys, especially in LA, because there's so many gold diggers and, you know, women that are like after wealthy men, I think they like it initially. But when it comes down to it and they see what it means to be with a successful woman, oftentimes they're not that supportive.
And does it limit the pool of guys because some are intimidated? Forget the fact that they feel the man can't be the priority, which I think is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Which I think that screens the pool for you. I think that because the guy that has to be the priority, I'm not sure you want to be with that guy.
I know. It's a dilemma because on the one hand, I do want somebody that's also successful and someone that's accomplished. So with that, typically when a guy is successful and accomplished, he does have an ego. I mean, let's be honest, it's ego. So yeah, they say they want an independent woman that has her thing going on and she's making money. But if at the end of the day, they don't sacrifice, they're not willing to just be like, oh, forget work, I'll come with you to Cabo, it bothers them.
If you listen to this series, I'll talk a lot about people's pickers, you know, what attracts people to other people.
Mm.
And I wonder if you're attracted to narcissistic men, because that's kind of what it sounds like.
No comments.
Okay. So you got to be careful. Guys that are really exciting to you might tend to be that way. So you have to find guys that are not quite so exciting, but still meet your criteria.
How do you do that?
I'm not a dating service.
How do you do that?
It takes work. That's like, just the way you worked at everything else, by the way. You have to really make a discipline out of and be very careful, too. I mean, but by the same token, you've got to be emotional. You can't be purely, if you're just purely cognitive, logical about it, you'll miss out on all the richness in relationships too.
And that's so true. You just literally hit the nail on the head. I think that's been another problem for me. And I don't know if it's because of my legal training. I don't know if it's just me as a person, but I think that's another problem. It's hard to sort of separate my professional demeanor and personality. It's kind of who I am from my personal, because as an attorney, you are analytical. You are, you know, strong, especially as a litigator, which is what I do. I'm a trial lawyer, so I'm constantly on guard. I'm constantly analyzing. So it's very hard to sort of like put that away at the, you know, like work is done. Now let me be soft and emotional. And it's difficult. It's very difficult to separate the two. So that's a struggle as well.
Let's talk about what it means for other women. Do you have a recommendation or from your experience or the things that other women can take away from this?
Yeah, I mean, I think every woman is different. And I do have some, you know, friends of mine that are women successful and they're not struggling the way I am. They're single and they're perfectly happy. And they say, you know, if it happens when I'm 50, it happens when I'm 50. If it happens, you know,
well, they don't want to have kids.
Yeah, they might not want to have, or they say adoption. You know, I've talked to some of them and they're like, I'll adopt. I have no problem adopting. And that's fine. That's their choice. But my advice would be to women that are trying to, you know, make it in their careers and be successful, is really try to find that balance. Like, try to, you know, set aside some time in your day to date, to go out. Go out with your friends, meet guys. If you're not out there and your whole entire life is just focused on career, it could happen that you open your eyes in your 30s and you're single and alone.
Do women carry a special burden with that? Do you have, feel like you had to work harder than your male counterparts? In other words, you had to really, like, that's the reason you couldn't balance, is you had to prove yourself.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is just like you're psychic, because it's so true. Part of it is the pressure I put on myself. And also it's society, because as a woman, oftentimes, and I'm sure it depends on the profession, but I can only speak about my profession. Of course, you have to work twice as hard. It sounds so cliche.
But there are a lot of female attorneys.
There are, but trial lawyers.
You chose that.
Oh, I chose it. And I'm, you know, dealing with a predominantly male profession. So I'm oftentimes going against, you know, males that are significantly older than me. And it is, it's difficult, because they look at you and their first impression, you know, I don't,
yeah,
you know what it may be. Like, oh, you're, I've walked into depositions and I'm seeing opposing counsel for the first time and they've literally called me honey.
Oh.
They're like, are you the sucker? Honey, can I get some coffee? And I'm like, honey? You know, they think I'm either the secretary.
What do you say?
I just I'm Anahita Setagafar. I'm the attorney. Oh, Anahita. You know, and they're just like blown away. And then even then they kind of, oh, she's just a little girl. Who is this? Oh, come on, this girl. And I feel like I have to literally try twice as hard and be more on point than I would normally have to be to get them to respect me. And it works. I mean, it works.
To make you a better attorney?
Exactly. I think I've become better because of it. Mm. But it's something that's always in the back of my mind. I feel like I always have to kind of prove it.
It's completely not fair. It makes me angry to hear about it. But on the other hand, it's like, oh, that's why people really become exceptional.
Yeah.
To overcoming adversity.
Exactly. Yeah. It pushed me. It motivated me. Let me put it that way. It didn't knock me down.
Give me a story. Have you ever just blasted a guy down for that bullshit?
Oh my God. I'll tell you a story that I was thinking about the other day, because I ran into this guy. So I was in law school and I was interested in entertainment and sports law at the time. So I took a sports law class and the professor was, I won't name his name. He's a very famous sports agent. He represents a ton of Major League Baseball players, and he taught this as an adjunct professor. So I walked into the class. It was the first day and I knew who he was. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And I'm probably one of the only women that was in that class. And he introduces himself and he says, you know, I've taught this class for 8 years and there has never been a girl that got the top grade in this class. He said that, Dr. Drew, and I just like, it literally just like, I kind of like perked up and I looked at him and I said to myself, I swear to God, I am getting the
top
gosh
grade.
Darn yeah. A plus in this class.
Yeah.
And so, and in law school, your grade is based on one final exam. So you go the whole semester and your grade is one exam. I got the A plus in the class. Yes, I was like, yay. So that to me, I think that was sort of when I kind of opened my eyes to like what type of sexism exists out there. I don't think he meant it in a bad way, but you know, he ended up taking me out to dinner and he had to announce it to the class. Like, Anahita, okay, fine. A girl finally amjured the class. Amjured means top grade. So I think that was the start for me. And to this day, we're still friends and like we still joke about it. But that was,
which is nice.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. Did he literally say girl?
He said girl. He said girl. He didn't say woman. He said girl. He said, I've never had a girl.
Did that bother you?
It kind of did. But I think back then I was so young, I probably did kind of identify myself as a girl. But now that I look back.
Do you still? Because let me
that's
be.
Interesting.
Because you're girly.
I'm girly. You know, that's a good question.
Is that a pejorative term now, or is that okay to be both, a woman and a girl?
I think it's okay to be both. That's another struggle, Dr. Drew. I have so many struggles. It is. It's another struggle because, again, in my profession, male-dominated, litigator, trial lawyer, you have to be aggressive.
You can't be a girl when you're litigating.
Yeah, you can't be a girl. But at the same time, I'm a girl. I'm feminine. I like clothes and shoes and bags and... So, yeah, it's definitely hard, but I think I would consider myself a girl. I would.
And as a somebody who's an expert in sexism and sexual harassment, you don't have any problem with that. And that in that area, mm-hmm. maybe you have balance.
In that idea, in that area, yeah, I do.
You have balance.
But being a girl and saying it's okay to be a girly girl is very different than walking into a deposition and having an opposing counsel say, hi, honey, or I have ties older than you, which is what another opposing attorney said to me one time.
Do you let me be just polemic with this. Do you bring some of that on by being girly?
No, I don't.
Or does being girly...
it's their perception.
It's on them, yeah.
It's on them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, of course, I don't feel like I should have to cover up and wear turtlenecks and pants to the floor. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be myself. But I think it says more about the other person, I feel, than it does about me.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Okay, so I'm interested still. I think people are going to be... drawn in by your story, mm-hmm. but I'm interested in what they can take away and apply in their own lives. I think we have to update on where you go from here, because now that you're paying attention to this stuff, it'll be interesting to see how you solve this. Because mm-hmm. you solve everything else in your life, why not solve this problem?
Exactly.
And it's not a problem. It's just
it's a problem, though, Dr. Drew. It's a problem. Let's not beat around the bush. It's a problem because it sucks. It sucks to feel that. Especially someone that's an overachiever, and I feel like all my life I have been, to feel like you can get everything you want, you can be the best at everything, but then there's something that you want so badly and you can't have it. It's a huge problem. It's a problem.
I'm sitting here feeling inadequate because I feel like this is such a uniquely female problem at this point in history that I almost feel like I want to convene a panel of women to talk about. I will kind of do.
Let's
maybe do that for the future podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
To talk about this because it's like, oh shit. Oh,
why don't
unfair.
Men have to deal? Yeah, why do men not have to deal with it?
The clock isn't ticking.
No, my brother is 2 years older than me and he doesn't have a care in the world, you know? He's like, I'm having fun and when it happens it happens, and you know, men don't have to worry. And also I feel that a lot of men don't have to decide between career and personal life. It's just, I think,
because
it's
they'll find women that will support them. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you'll find men that will do that too these days, I'm sure.
It's hard,
but it's not, that doesn't meet your criteria, though.
Yeah,
you know, you got the certain criteria, so that's on you. But whatever, I think they're not a reasonable criteria; they're reasonable.
That's not asking too much, is it?
No, and it's sort of what you deserve if that's what you want, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I think so.
But I wonder if the future is all about taking control of fertility. And maybe it's freezing eggs when people are younger, because that's when the eggs are more hardy.
Really?
Not that you couldn't do it now. You could. But you should go consult with somebody about that, just so you feel like you're in control of this.
For the first time in my life, I've been actually thinking about that. I never thought it would come to that. And again, you know, for some people, that's fine. But it bothers me. It actually really bothers me that I have to consider that. But it is something I'm considering.
How long has it been bothering you?
Probably a good year or two now. Ever since my friends that I grew up with were starting to have kids. And then I started feeling that pressure and that. Not even a pressure. First it was pressure and then it was desire. Then it was like, I want that too. I want that. And I can't have it and I don't have it.
Would you be willing to take time off your law practice to raise kids?
I think I would. I think at this point I've achieved what I wanted to achieve. And so I would be comfortable doing that. I would never give it up.
You could keep doing TV.
Yeah. I would definitely keep. That would be ideal.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would ever completely give it up. And by the way, I've had men that have asked me that question, which bothers me. But I would. I definitely would.
It sounds like you date a lot.
No, I mean, these aren't guys that I've dated. These are guys that would approach me to try to date me. And these things come up when they find out I'm a lawyer and they start asking questions, and then these things come up. So I don't date guys like that. And that maybe that's a problem too. Just off the bat, if initially they don't meet certain standards, I'm like, okay, bye. So
ball buster.
But I'm not, Dr. Drew. I don't want to waste time. I just don't want to waste time.
I get it. So. It's just, listen, you've worked very hard and you have certain, you want your life to go a certain way. I understand that. Yeah. You deserve that. Okay, well, here's the deal. I want to take a little break. And then we're going to, I've decided we're going to convene a panel for you, but that'll be in a future podcast. Okay. And maybe of other professional women even who are struggling similarly, or maybe some that have solved it. I think it'd be a really interesting thing.
That would be good.
Yeah.
That's what I would
and how hear. They yeah. solve it, that kind of thing. But I'll take a break and we're going to come back, and I've got some, at least a call on the sexism issue and the sexual harassment. I want to get more deeply into that area of professional expertise for you. Okay.
Great.
All right. Be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Drew, and for you that are the members of the Swole Patrol, the runners and lifters, weekend warriors, injuries happen, especially as you get older. If you don't want to slow down for ice therapy, you can get Arctic Ease Instant Cold Wraps. That's right. You've never experienced anything like this before. It is a cold therapy you use while still active. You can be running, biking, lifting, and keep your joints or muscles wrapped and cool if that's appropriate. Arctic Ease Wraps stays in place while giving you similar recovery to ice itself. No freezer needed. The sleek design fits comfortably. No bulky ice. They're reusable. They're proven effective. Just put Arctic Ease on and you have targeted instant cold and compression therapy right where you need it before, during, and after exercise. Your choice. For pain, swelling, injuries, you can use safely Arctic Ease for instant, long-lasting cold compression therapy, even while you are training. That is the significant advantage, and you've got to try it. So don't put your training on ice. Get reusable Arctic Ease cold wraps at CVS Pharmacy and get instant cooling relief when and where you need it. Or visit Arctic Ease, ArcticEase, ArcticEase.com. Hi, I'm Dr. Drew, and of course it is winter and cold weather is here, and it's getting even colder. And for some of you, that means dry, itchy, so-called winter skin. Now, instead of using the same old anti-itch product this winter, consider using something new. It's called Tricolm. A recent study showed that it is more effective at reducing itch than 1% hydrocortisone, which is what you get over the counter. Tricolm works on skin irritation, and be sure it is, in fact, just irritation. If there's any question, of course, see your physician to make sure it's not a significant medical or dermatological condition. Tricolm is backed by the itch-free guarantee. If Tricolm does not stop your itch, you can mail them the empty tube, and you'll get a full refund. Now, if you have this so-called winter skin, get a tube of Tricolm for your medicine cabinet, your car, your desk at work. It can help. It's guaranteed itch relief that is more effective than hydrocortisone with none of the potential side effects of steroids. Find the white and blue box in the anti-itch aisle at Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS Pharmacy.
Mathnasium. That's right. Mathnasium is your neighborhood math-only learning center. I've got a mathematician in my family. My son's a math major in college, and these guys could even benefit him. They meet you where the student is. Your child will leap ahead where they started behind or already ahead of math. They will meet that kid where his needs are or her needs. And it's how they've grown to over 500 franchise locations with opportunities available in communities across the U.S. They believe that every child has the ability to be successful in math. It's just teaching it in a way that makes sense to them and makes it fun and interesting. You don't have to be born with any natural ability. You can be taught easily to be great at math. And these days, I'm telling you, that math skill is critical. Children don't naturally hate math. They don't like being confused and intimidated. Mathnasium teaches kids to think about math the way naturals do. Math makes sense. The results are transformative. Grades improve. Excitement grows. Doors open. And think about it. Kids, if they get good at math, you got to understand something. That is the foundation of science. And so engineering, science, math, computer programming, all of it. And you cannot deny those are critical skills today. And Mathnasium changes attitudes, builds confidence. Kids want to go to Mathnasium. They enjoy it. And I think they too understand the importance of these skills these days. So finish the school year strong. For my listeners, call today and get a free parent pack. Call 844-799-2999. That is 844-799-2999. Or go to mathnasium.com to find the center nearest you. Again, that number, 844-799-2999.
Now back to All About Women with Dr. Drew.
My guest is Anahita Sedigetvar, and she is an expert in sexual harassment and sexism. How does that playing field look today to you?
I think it's worse than a lot of people think it is. If we can look at the mayor of San Diego and what just happened with him, sexual harassment.
Did you get involved in that case at all?
I did not, no. I did comment quite a bit about that case, but no. Gloria Allred did, though.
Shocking.
Your friend. Yeah, shocker. But no, I think, you know, I think what many people might not know is that sexual harassment, even in 2013, even though we have tons of training, we have all these new laws, people seem to be more educated and more aware. Sexual harassment is so prevalent in the workplace. And it's not the typical sexual harassment that people think of oftentimes. It's not the boss sitting in his chair and slapping his secretary's butt. Can I say butt?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a podcast, Andy.
Oh, you can? Okay. So it's not just like, you know, slapping her ass and saying, hey, toots, you know. We have, I've handled cases, girl-on-girl sexual harassment. I've handled cases where women are sexually harassing men in the workplace. I think that's what I'm seeing more of, actually, these days, which is kind of interesting.
Is it always people in positions of authority over the other people? Is that the only time it really applies?
That's, legally speaking, that's generally the only time that it's actionable. But you do see coworker harassment. But typically, what you do see and what people come to me for is when their supervisor or boss sexually harasses them. I think it's a power thing.
Why is it only actionable then?
Well, the law, it's a legal thing. I mean, the law basically says that defines sexual harassment when somebody who has control and power over your working conditions.
Misuses that.
Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can bring a sexual harassment case when it's employee sexual harassment, but the standard is much higher. You would have to show that your employer knew about it. It becomes much more difficult.
How do women protect themselves just out in the world from this kind of thing? Because if it's happening at the workplace, I imagine it's happening all over the place. Does the law protect them out there?
Yeah, there are. I mean, it wouldn't be under the guise of employment law lawsuits, but you know, I always tell women in the workplace, and when my clients come to me, women that feel they need an attorney for things they've experienced in the workplace, I find that oftentimes it's something they've endured for years. Some, you know, it could be a month, a year, and they're just so scared to say anything.
Why?
They're scared to complain because of retaliation.
They're afraid they're going to lose their job?
Yeah. You know, a lot of women have worked very, and men too, but I'm just going to speak of women. You know, they've worked hard to get to where they are, and you don't want to be the whistleblower. You don't want to be the tattletale. You don't want to lose your job or maybe be demoted, or, you know, there's always that risk.
I would bet, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think that a lot of times they feel, for lack of a better word, friendly towards their coworkers and bosses, mm-hmm. and they don't want to hurt them in some weird way. Does
yeah.
that make sense?
I've seen that too.
Yeah.
I've actually seen situations where I've had clients that come to me and tell me about things that have happened, and it always escalates, by the way. And they do. They'll say, well, oh, you know, I feel so bad for him. He's just from the old school. I've heard that so much. But then it finally gets to a point where they can't. Like, once it gets to touching, then I think a lot of people realize, no way. But yeah, I've had, you know, women clients, and they're telling me their story, and I said, how in the world did you deal with this for so long? And they have said, well, you know, he's such a nice guy. He's just older. And, you know, they actually make excuses
for
them.
They identify with the perpetrator.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You probably, again, know more about that than I do. But I've definitely seen that. And it's a scary thing because you don't want, in some industries, you can be blacklisted. You know, like in the entertainment industry, we've seen this happen when women complain of sexual harassment, or, you know, certain industries are very tight knit and you don't want to be that woman that.
Well, it's not even blacklisted. It's like if you're an independent contractor and employers have a choice of who they employ, they're not going to want somebody that's been
exactly.
suing everybody.
Yeah. Why do we want to, exactly. Why do we want to, oh, she's a troublemaker.
Well, just, yeah. Why would you, not, forget being pejorative. Like, I'm not so sure I want to be with around somebody who has caused trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Who has caused trouble.
Yeah.
No, that's very true. So it's difficult. And, you know, the good thing I can say about that is that the law recognizes that, you know, that sometimes people can be retaliated against for complaining. And so employers can be, you know, liable. If you go and complain to your HR department, your supervisor, whatever the protocol is for your company, and they do anything to retaliate against you, that's actionable. So you get, you know, that's like an additional claim you can bring against your company.
Tell me what happens when it's the men complaining.
That's more difficult. I've had cases. I had a case recently where a client came and approached me. He's a man, and he was being sexually harassed by his manager. And his manager was not gay, which was kind of interesting. But he was leaving porn videos on his computer, sending him text messages of gay porn, pictures of gay porn. I can go on and on about the things he was doing.
Are the males always the perpetrator? Don't women ever perpetrate?
I've had women too.
Okay.
You know what's so funny lately? The past few years, I've noticed a lot of the sexual harassment revolves around porn. It's always like before it would be things like comments or grabbing, touching. Now, like a lot of the people that come to me say that, you know, my boss will like email me porn and say, you know, check out how this girl is doing XYZ sex act. Can you do that? Or leaving like naked pictures. It just revolves around porn.
Has it become so normalized that they don't realize what they're doing?
Really, like the mayor of San Diego. Oh, I didn't know that grabbing a girl's ass and
I think people understand the physical boundary thing, but the porn is such a new domain that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because in my mind, when I look at some of the pictures, I'm thinking to myself, how could they not know? How can a boss not know that sending a picture of a sex act, an explicit sex act, to someone that works underneath them is wrong?
Does that person have to object in order to get the whole ball rolling, to it be an actionable situation?
Yeah, I mean, again, the law recognizes it's hard sometimes to object immediately, but I always tell my clients, if you don't say something, how can it be remedied? If you don't complain about it, how can it be remedied?
But if, let's say, you don't complain about it, is it still potentially actionable?
It's actionable. Well, eventually, you would have had to have complained for it to get to court. So, yeah, but oftentimes, defense lawyers will use the lack of complaints, at least initially, as a defense. I've had defense lawyers say to me straight up to my face, your client wanted it. She didn't say it. She enjoyed it. She enjoyed watching porn movies found on her computer of 10 guys ejaculating on a woman's face in the middle of the workday. And so, yeah, obviously it doesn't help your case to sort of endure it for a long time. But again, it's understandable, and jurors understand why many women don't complain right away.
And so these are jury cases.
These are jury cases. I always do mine before juries. I don't like to do bench trials on sexual harassment cases.
Do you have a choice in that?
Yeah, you can opt as a plaintiff. You can opt to have a jury trial or have a judge hear the case.
And normally, things go well for your clients?
So far, so good. Knock on wood. What I do typically, and what happens, 98% of cases here in California settle before trial, which is a good thing for the system and for everyone involved. But yeah, I've had some really lucrative jury awards in these sexual harassment cases.
Can you describe a good one? Like, are you allowed to?
Like a monetary?
So people get a sense. No. So get a sense of what a good case would have been.
Well, a great case would be when a jury identifies with your client, understands that they couldn't work. You know, in the extreme cases, for example, if they're being groped and touched, that they can't work, and they award these individuals with back pay. So, you know, sometimes they do quit and they can't find a job for a year or 2 years, and they're going through litigation. So you can get awarded your damages could be your back pay, what money you would have earned if you were still working. There's emotional distress damages. A lot of times I send my clients to go talk with someone because they need to, these can be really, it sounds funny and we're joking about it, but these can be very traumatic situations for people. So, they can get therapy and the jurors will award them all the costs for therapy and even sometimes punitive damages.
How about, again, I'm fascinated by a woman acting out on a man sexual harassment. Give me an example of that.
Okay, I can give you an example of a case that I handled where there was a woman who owned a pretty successful company. She was a very attractive, successful woman, and she was sexually harassing my client, who was a man. And she was, again, this involves porn. She was sending him text messages of naked pictures of female body parts.
Were they hers?
they weren't her. Well, we kind of had a little dispute as to whether or not some of them were pictures of her. She denied it, of course. But she was, sexting him.
Right.
She would send him links, again, to his work email, which I can't believe she was that dumb about it, quite frankly, because we can trace all of these emails. You can't get rid of them. Links to YouPorn sites. She would talk to him about sexual fantasies she had with her husband.
How long did this go on for?
And this went on for about 6 months. So it wasn't, I mean, it was still horrible, but I mean, this was a man and he was literally offended. Like he said at first he thought it was, this is just her. This is how she is. She's a powerful woman. She makes a lot of money and she's attractive. I asked him, I said, were you flattered at first? He says no, but maybe at first I think he was a little flattered, but then it got really gross. Like he said he felt uncomfortable. Like he felt he had to sort of like reciprocate. And, you know, it's just, how can you work under those circumstances, you know?
Was she trying to initiate something with him, do you think?
I don't think it ever got to that point,
what was her intention with this, do you think?
Was she trying to just make him feel uncomfortable? I don't know, but some of the messages, she would literally talk about what she would do with her husband in bed and that she would... I don't know how far.
Yeah,
she would fantasize about him while making love with her husband. And so I don't know if she
Isn't
never
that about
directly.
As sort of intentional as you can get. Like she's like wants to do this with the guy.
Yeah, I was like, she pretty much did everything other than proposition him. So I'm sure if he opened the door and was like, oh, well, do you want to make that a reality? I'm sure she would say yes. But she never directly propositioned him. And so we settled that case. You know, we settled that case. And part of our settlement included that she had to include as part of their employee handbook certain rules and procedures, because they didn't have anything in place for complaints of sexual harassment. So we kind of, you know, I'd like to think we made a change. Yeah.
But I think when guys initiate this, they think they're going to have something with this part, with this employee.
Do you think so? Or is it like, sometimes
testing,
I think,
yeah.
Isn't it a power thing though? Is it really
some
about
guys,
the sex or is it
well,
a power
for
thing?
For men, it's mostly, what do you take a pull in the room? It's about the sex, right? Yeah. They're saying yes.
It is about the sex.
Let's take a call. You should understand
Sometimes
that about these perpetrators.
Okay.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, my name's Julie.
Hi, Julie. What do you got for us?
Yes, my question is, I work with this guy, and when we're at work, he's very professional. He doesn't hit on women, but there's, like, extracurricular activities, like dinners or luncheons they'll have for work, and he'll... be inappropriate then, making like sexual comments and sometimes texting. And what my question is this unwanted advances related to work or because this isn't during workplace hours or times? Is it just something different?
Yeah, that's a great question. And no, the harassment does not have to take place during work hours for it to be actionable. So, and we see that a lot of times, you know, it'll be the supervisors, the people in power get their courage when they're drinking. So oftentimes you do have the harassment that takes place at Christmas parties or holiday parties. And it's so unfortunate. It's so sad that things like that happen, but it's totally still actionable. It does not have to take place between the hours of 9 to 5.
What should Julie do?
Have you complained, Julie? Have you reported this to anybody?
I thought because it was happening like, you know, at office events or some of us go to the same places that it wasn't work-related, even though he is the boss.
That's an interesting... Well, what if they just happen to be at the same bar and he behaved that way?
Well, does it make you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel that his actions, wherever they are, does it make it difficult for you to go to work?
Yeah, it's kind of like when he says things, I feel like kind of dirty or something when I have to go back to work because it's just very inappropriate that he's the boss and he would act like that.
Yeah.
And there's other women around some of these things that don't work that show interest in him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, I think maybe if it's him just having a power trip because
probably
other women that work with him also, he does this too. But yeah, during work hours, he's like professional, you can't joke. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the advice that I can give you is that if you feel it's affecting your ability to work, you have a right to work in a workplace free of harassment. So if there's certain behavior that he is engaging in that's making you uncomfortable, I would say you have to complain and document it. I always tell people verbal complaints are not sufficient because you never know down the line. You need to make sure you protect yourself. So complain, put it in writing.
A few texts, and I've saved the text messages. I've locked them so that they don't get deleted.
Yeah, no, that's definitely smart. But I think you, in order to protect yourself, because like I said, oftentimes, unfortunately, these things escalate. So you need to protect yourself. You need to go, if you have an employee handbook, follow the protocol. If you don't, go to the HR department, go to, you know, his supervisor, go to somebody and
complain.
What if
it's a small company that's sort of, he's the sole proprietor?
Yeah.
And there's no HR.
That makes it tough. In those situations,
well,
again.
Well, this is a bigger company, so there is a boss above his head.
Go to that boss. Go to that boss. I can tell by your voice that you're distressed. So clearly this is something that's affecting you. And again, you need to say something if you want it to stop.
All right, Julie. Good luck with that, okay?
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
All right. What does it say about us, society, humans, that we're doing this? Do you have any global...
You know,
thoughts on this?
Yeah, I've wondered sometimes if it's a power thing, if it's this need for power like an aphrodisiac.
They want
people.
Sex. The guys want sex,
but they're not getting it.
Well,
they're not getting it.
They're testing. They probably test all over the place in their world. If they test 1,000 times and get one, they're going to keep testing.
Yeah, if it works once, I've heard that before too. Yeah, I mean, people, I guess, are just, I don't know, they don't know boundaries, they're really horny, I don't know. I don't know, because sometimes when I meet the perpetrator, I meet the defendant, I look and I'm like, you know, again, not to be judgmental, but you just don't understand what this, like,
what
this man
thinking?
Is thinking, you think you're going to get her, like, it just... It doesn't make sense, and that sounds so wrong, and I'm not saying you have to be a model to pursue a sexual harassment case, you do not, okay? But I wonder... I mean, I would be disingenuous to say that I don't wonder sometimes.
It makes me wonder if these guys see some other guys that actually pull this off or something. Maybe it's actually happening somewhere we don't hear about it because it's not, you know what I mean, it doesn't get action.
You know what I think it is? I think sometimes, and this is just in general, guys want to believe, like guys with money, when you see a very wealthy guy with some hot, young, you know, 20-something girl, we all can, from the outside, see, okay, 99% she's with him for his money. But I think those guys somehow convince themselves, no, she really loves me.
No, it's me.
No, it's me. She thinks I'm hot. She thinks I'm good in bed. She thinks... And I'm just like, I think that they really convince themselves of that.
They don't convince themselves. They spontaneously think that.
They do. They spontaneously assume.
It's the same thing that has guys sitting in a strip bar handing the money going, she loves me. She's
she
here for me.
Oh, she's giving me the eye.
Yeah,
like,
she's here
no,
for me.
She's not.
And he keeps throwing money. Like, yeah,
yeah
that's the same thinking.
It's so perplexing because anyone on the outside can see that and be like, oh my God, dude, if you lost your money, that girl would not be with you. I mean, it's incredible. Like, my office is in Century City, so I go to the mall, Century City Mall, for lunch sometimes, and you just see it. You see, like, these sugar daddies with these young girls, and they're shopping at Bloomingdale's, and it's just laughable.
But didn't we have a conversation where you wouldn't be with the guys either unless they had law degrees or medical degrees? Didn't we have that conversation about an hour ago?
That's different.
It's different when she does it.
It's different when I... No, because the thing is, what I meant by that is I would... Hey, I'm not looking for a sugar daddy. Don't
no,
get
I understand
twisted.
That. I understand
but,
that.
Yeah,
the opposite. You want to be autonomous.
Well,
that's what the conversation we had. But
no, not 100%.
But the guys did have
Look,
to meet criteria.
Of course. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Of course.
Well, maybe those women have the same criteria.
But what are they offering? They're offering, like, okay, this is what I'm saying. At least I have those standards, but I feel I can sort of justify it because I have something to offer. I'm not just like...
You've earned it.
I've earned it. So when you see these girls, you know, and again, I don't blame the girls because look, if you're in your 20s and you have some like 7-year-old man buying you like the coolest shoes and bags, you know, more power to you. But it's the guys that perplex me. They really think she loves me because I'm this. I'm
yeah,
hot.
It's all about me.
It's like, you're not, dude. You're not. Like, the money goes, that chick is gone to the next. Like, so that's what's a little bit, I think, interesting. And you see that in the workplace as well. I think sometimes these guys might maybe think she wants me.
Yeah, because I'm in a position of power,
yeah,
she must want me.
Yeah.
So. I've got a break. Again, it's been a pleasure. We want to have you back. This has been really
so much
interesting.
Fun.
Yes, it is great.
And I got a mini therapy session, Dr. Drew. Thank you.
Very mini,
that.
But you've inspired me to pull a panel together to deal with this issue because it is sort of troubling/heartbreaking that you guys have to deal with this. It's not right.
It is.
And I feel inadequate as a male trying to address it, I feel like we need some women's input particularly, and so I'd happy to bring that here. So again, Anahita Sedigatpour is a defense attorney, a sexual harassment. You do criminal defense too, also.
I do select criminal defense as well.
And her information will be up on our website. And until next time, I'm Dr. Drew.
This is Corolla Digital.